on to the sermon. A few months ago, those of us who were regularly participate as lay leaders were asked to select our summer dates to lead the summer service, and I thought I was being incredibly clever. I chose the first service of the summer and figured, my summer will be nice and flexible, and ha! Kleber decides he's going to leave, and instead of feeling this light airiness in my choice to lead today's service, I feel kind of an awesome responsibility that comes with being the first person to lead after his official tenure here. And I decided to take that challenge on and help us move into the right path as we journey ahead for the first time in over 10 years without Kleber piloting the boat. So the sermon I initially had in mind had to be shelved for a later time. You'll get it later. And I shifted gears to address an issue I thought was timely, but not a topic that would lay heavy on people. I mean, having to say goodbye to someone who means so much to us is tough, but goodbyes are an important part of life. Instead of focusing on the tough side of goodbyes, I wanted to address the concept of change, how change is essential in our lives, and walking through change to the other side is essential if we want to continue to grow as individuals and as a congregation. So, let me be clear up front, I hate change. More accurately, I hate being changed. And I mean, it's okay if things change around me. I mean, if you change and you change and that changes, not a problem. I can deal with that because it doesn't affect me. But, you know, it does. And most people feel the same way I do. I think probably all of us in here feel like, wow, you know, I don't want to be changed. I kind of like things the way they are. It's comfortable. And I get that. And that's really what the research shows, right? People, I mean, this is what I do for a living, right? This is what people do. They're okay if you change, but not so much if I change. Change management, uncertainty, ambiguity, all of these are issues that I try to teach my students at SIUE, whether they're undergrads or grads. how do we deal with change? How do we manage it the best way we can? How do we make decisions when there's so little information on which we can depend? What if it all looks like chaos? And how do we make sense of it all? A video I use with my students is called Did You Know? It's about 3 to 4 minutes long, and it hammers the audience with this high-intensity music and these fantastic statistics about the rate at which things are changing in the world. Rapid changes that we can't even begin to comprehend at a speed that almost makes what we know obsolete as soon as we learn it. It's a bit sensational in its delivery, but it makes the point that things change fast, and it will only get faster, so we might as well sit back and enjoy the ride. Now, I think I've related this to you before in a previous sermon, but I regularly tell my students that there are 3 life maxims, 2 of which I borrowed from Ben Franklin. 3 things in life that we can be certain of: death, taxes, and that things are absolutely going to change, no matter how we slice it. We can't avoid it. Things change around us. We can either embrace that change, though, or be left behind. Buddhists have a unique perspective on this issue of change. Buddhists understand that when we desire something we cannot have, or we hold on to the past, we face certain suffering, and it is suffering that creates pain for all of us in all our lives. In this way, I would personally argue, in my opinion, our human suffering creates a sense of hell here on earth. Hell really isn't out there, but really is here as we resist change or hold on to things that are largely transient in our lives. When we accept change, when we let go, we can find peace in our minds and our hearts and can be open to the new opportunities that await us. And we heard that in our reading. Let me share a personal example. And I know I've told many of you the story about a past girlfriend that had her stroke and ended our relationship. It was really a watershed moment for me in practicing my Buddhist faith. When she had this stroke, I spent time with her while she was healing, and I thought, geez, you know, life is going to be fine, we're going to rebuild, it'll be different, but I think that'll be okay. But while she was in the midst of rehab, I had a return here. I was just starting my job at SIUE, and there's no way I could miss the first day of class. There was just no way that could happen. So 2 days after I returned, she called me to say she needed space, that she didn't want me to call her or write her or make plans to visit her, and I couldn't call her family or be in contact with anyone about her condition. They wouldn't tell me. She said she'd call me in a month, and we'll see what happens. And to this day, I still don't know why she decided to do that, but I respected her wishes, and I basically sat on my hands for about a month. Painful doesn't touch it, but my goal here isn't to sort of replay that pain. Really, it's to share that moment that changed how I saw the world. And during that month, I prayed. I prayed for her, I prayed for our relationship, I prayed that she return to me, and that we can continue to build the life we had begun to build. Even if those plans looked different, I was ready. I bargained. I wanted her back in my life, and that's all I could hold on to. And the more I held on to it, the more I created more and more pain in myself. I lost 40 pounds in a month. I had a life coach who was working with me just to eat something each day so I wouldn't end up in the hospital. But my life coach was also a dedicated Buddhist, and she worked hard to keep me buoyed and connected to my core values. That, of course, was harder for me than trying to shove a random bagel or bite of a hot dog into my mouth to keep me nourished. And given I had already lost 40 pounds and simply couldn't eat or keep food down, you can imagine how much harder it was for me to actually think about what it meant to be a practicing Buddhist, which is what I wanted, but I struggled. Each day, she reminded me that holding on to and praying for what I wanted wasn't the solution to my pain, that the pain would still be there. It would still hold on to me like the tentacles of an octopus trying to drown me in my sorrows. I couldn't imagine change. I couldn't imagine life without her. I couldn't envision a new normal because I had just moved to Illinois and had walked away from everything familiar in order to build a life, a different life here. I just wasn't ready to accept that everything we had shared, everything we had wanted with and for each other was now gone. So my daily pain continued until I found myself one day in the shower getting ready for work, and I suddenly burst into tears. And my prayer changed without warning. I no longer prayed for what I wanted, but I prayed for acceptance, and I prayed for her happiness and well-being, and most of all, I prayed for her to release me from the pain and to just let me go so I could move on with my life. In that moment, I could feel the knot untangle in my stomach, my shoulders felt looser, my head felt lighter, and I finally understood what my coach had been telling me for the previous month, that pain comes with attachment to something I could not have. And resisting that pain would only continue to proliferate my pain. Only when I stood outside the situation and accepted the change would I be able to feel the relief I so greatly desired. She only called me just a few days after that to permanently end the relationship, and with great relief, I moved forward to rebuild my life. And I still don't like change. But I get it in a deeper and more profound way than I ever did before. I have a few friends who've gone through similar challenges, and the metaphor I like to use is that of walking through a waterfall. And imagine, if you will, you're sitting behind the waterfall on a narrow precipice looking out at a beautiful vista. You're protected behind the waterfall, but you're also isolated, and you really can't move from that narrow precipice except to move forward through the torrential downpour of the waterfall that will pelt you with an unimaginable force. You know the feeling, I'm sure. You think about the lazy river at Six Flags, Hurricane Harbor, or raging rivers, right? Any other kind of water park. You're peacefully floating along the river, and then you encounter one of those horrendous man-made waterfalls that they use to kind of cool you off and to move that river along, and you've seen all the teens that they're battling each other to try to keep you underneath the waterfalls, and they want you to be pelted by this, right? So I floated there in my own volition, crazy as that is. It's exhilarating, right? But it's also painful if you're not prepared for that pelting, and it takes your breath away. You feel battered and you feel tossed about. Now, if you can imagine magnifying that maybe 100 times, like walking through Niagara Falls, you can kind of get a sense of what we're talking about. It's gonna hurt. But just like feeling any real change can hurt, but a step at a time, if you're willing to endure that discomfort that comes with the journey, the rewards on the other side of the waterfall, on the other side of the pain, is really beyond measure. So where am I leading you? The Buddhist tradition uses labyrinths to do walking meditation, and these intricate twists and turns, moving within, then returning to the outside again, are all part of the means by which we journey to our core to discover ourselves, and we recognize that change is inevitable. The process of walking and breathing and meditating activates our own ability to walk through change and to deal with whatever crises we are facing. This process is centuries old and can serve us well if we're facing personal or professional challenges, or even facing the emotional challenge of seeing a beloved minister move on to a new congregation. Change can feel like a burden or something to be feared, but it is also an amazing opportunity. If you remember one of Kleber's sermons from a few months ago, Conservatives have closed personalities. They don't like change, and they want to preserve the status quo. Liberals have open personalities. They like change, and they want to have new and exciting experiences. And while I'm not necessarily advocating that we see chaos, but dang it, people, we're liberals. Come on. Here, by and large, that's who we are. We embrace a liberal revolutionary theology. So change should not be scary as much as it is a wonderful opportunity. Even if we kind of like the way things were, it's okay to say that, but it's also okay to say, it's time, it's good, let's go. If we always cling to the things that have always been done, newer and potentially better opportunities will go by unnoticed. They'll slip through our fingers before we can even recognize that they are there. If we are busy fighting the change and resisting it with all of our might, we won't see the new possibilities, and we'll just find ourselves spiraling deeper into despair. The changes we face here as a congregation may feel daunting, but it is truly a great opportunity to learn more about ourselves individually and as a congregation collectively. We need to know more about who we are, what we want, and then we need to breathe and let the process unfold before us. Reverend Wolf will be our guide, but your role is to truly help us find out what we want and what we want to accomplish. We need to all walk together on this journey, breathing, meditating, processing, and as the Wailing Jenny said, one people, one voice. This is our greatest opportunity to exercise our voice and to shape the future of First UU. We've had an amazing journey with Kleber and Linda, and we have built an amazing special place where love and justice abound. But people come and go, and we have a strong foundation on which to build First UU and continue to grow and embrace our mission. Friday night, as I sat and listened to everyone speak from their hearts, it became abundantly clear that we have succeeded in the first crucial step of change management. We have a solid organizational culture that's going to sustain us even when our strong and beloved leader steps away. To make a business analogy, because I'm a business professor, I have to do that. Southwest Airlines was the dream of Herb Kelleher. He made that organization what it is today. When he retired, critics assumed that what made Southwest great was Herb. Herb was great, but what made Southwest really great was the people who worked in it and embodied the values of their founder. They internalized those values and continued to personify them even after Herb had long since retired. Does that mean that Southwest is the same company it was at its founding? Oh gosh, no. It's certainly evolved. We don't have to tote our luggage from gate to gate. For those of you that maybe remember the early days of Southwest Airlines, you had to pick up your luggage and move them to the next when you changed flights. That's all gone, yay. They're also flying to international locations, which is something they swore they would never do. And now they're growing at a faster rate than ever before, which is also another thing that they had not traditionally done. They are still one of the best airlines to fly and one of the best companies to work for because their core values and company culture are solid. We are solid and we are strong. And if you don't believe that, you should have been here Friday night. It was the most amazing experience, and despite the tears and the challenges, I wouldn't change a thing. So walk through the change, walk through the challenges, and I know that what we will have on the other side of this is a reward beyond imagination. We just have to be mindful and resist the desire to hold on to what was and recognize that new opportunities are there if we are quiet enough to hear them. So what does this mean for us? Number one. Breathe. When you feel the fears and worries bubble up in you, use your breath and keep you centered. So everybody, close your eyes. Deep breath. Inhale. And exhale. Let it go. Okay? Number two, use your voice. This is our time to decide what we want, how we want it, and when we want it. Everyone's voice matters. Everyone's. You'll be asked by many of our lay leadership to voice your opinion. Do it, because it matters. When you want to say, no way, is number three. Stop and ask yourself, am I saying no because I'm scared, or I'm being cranky and ornery, or am I saying no because it truly doesn't feel like the right path for us? If you stop and wait and listen to your body and listen to your heart, it will guide you. But don't be afraid to say no if it feels right. And lastly, have fun and learn something. Right? Let's practice what we preach. This is a congregation founded on love and connection and compassion, and the energy that connects all of us will truly guide us. But remember, when Reverend Wolf arrives, we'll have to find a way to bring her, even if just temporarily, into that energetic circle. And believe me, the energy flow is a strong one, so I would like everybody to hold hands, if you can. Connect with the people next to you. All right? In front of you, behind you, it's all good. Just hold hands. Okay. Feel that energy, my friends. This is going to sustain us, and we have to allow that energy to flow to those who are new and those who are here to guide us on our journey. And if we hold back or use it in a way that is dysfunctional, this could also hurt us. So be mindful of how we use this energy. It is precious, and it needs to be tended carefully. Okay? So remember, we are one people, and this is one voice. All right. All right. Amen.